Welcome, O listener, to another episode of Spam, Spam, Spam Humbug. This is episode 108 of the podcast, and we have another great discussion lined up for you. This week, we are joined by Clortos Dragon for an in-depth discussion about the history of Ultima 9 Redemption, a Morrowind-based attempt to remake Ultima 9. Clortos was there when the project was founded, and so discusses its history and some of the many pitfalls that it encountered along the way. We also discuss Ultima fan projects in general, although we're going to have to do a deeper dive into this subject, I think, in the future. Also, just a reminder, we are now hosted on Anchor.fm, a new and much more social podcast hosting platform. Find us at anchor.fm/SSSH podcast and take advantage of some of the neat community features there. Leave us voice messages up to a minute in duration and give our episodes applause. And if you're listening in the Anchor app on iOS or Android, you can also favorite our episodes and the podcast itself. For those of you who do the smart home thing, you can find us on Apple HomePod. Try saying, "Hey Siri, play the podcast Spam, Spam, Spam Humbug," and see what happens. And we should also be live on Google Home. Try saying, "Hey Google, play the podcast Spam, Spam, Spam Humbug." We're also thrilled to welcome a whole bunch of new members to the Ultima Dragons group on Facebook. Steve, Anthony, Quinn, James, Oscar, Jerry, Jeremy, Douglas, Eric, Devin, Kevin, Brad, Clodian, Ekron, Fabian, Yaroslav, Sean, Jeff, Dibheed, Wes, Miguel, Russell, Charlene, Dave, Emil, Jadira, Berger, Brandon, Adam, Ted, Douglas, Micah, Tigo, Esby, Simpson, Mike, Tina, Scott, Jennifer, Laszlo, Alex, Bartholomew, Nad, Joshua, Ling, Dave, Mark, Raquel, Matt, Corey, Paul, Chris, and Matthias. Welcome and splut to all. Splut is the traditional greeting of the Ultima Dragons. It's the sound a pie makes when it hits you in the face. And as you can tell, it's been a little while since the last time we did a roll call like that. And of course, as always, this episode of Spam, Spam, Spam Humbug is brought to you by our Patreon backers. Thank you to everyone who supports Spam, Spam, Spam Humbug and the Ultima Codex by that means. And as always, a hearty thank you to our co-producers, Seth, Goldenflame, Chris, Brickbat, Dominic, Violation, Cranberry, Shaman07AK, Gradia, Christopher, Bruce, Edward, the Hearth of Britannia, Dark Wraith Dragon, Helgriff, Gronk, Pascal, and Thorwan. And now, enjoy the show. Okay, so, well, I guess first off, a big welcome back to Clortos. I never remember which pronunciation is yours or mine. I think I'm Clortos. You've always had it as Clortos, right?
Yeah, it's however you want to do it is totally fine. You know, as I say, I based it off of Ghostbusters. You know, Lewis Tully becomes possessed by Vince Clortho.
Ah, right.
And, yeah, to like 11 or 12 year old me, that must have seemed like a pretty good dragon name. I don't know why, but
well, there you go.
Here we are indeed.
And so, all right, you've obviously done a few different things around the Ultima community. You've actually been on the podcast before. You helped me out with some bite-sized virtue episodes, and we've been talking about doing another set. But you were in what I'm sure seems like a past life now, one of the founding members of the Ultima 9 Redemption team. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Technically, yes.
Technically, yes.
Well, I mean, no, it's really not technically. I mean, I was there. The man known as Avitus Kingsman?
Yep.
I can't remember exactly his full moniker, but he was really involved in the Ultima Legacy, like Ultima Online Shard.
The UO Free Shard.
Yes. And we were
kind of
both
like the unofficial UDIC hangout.
Yes. Yeah. More or less at one time for sure. But we were both sort of working on what was known as, originally known as Alter U9.
Yes.
So I think it was Mo Dragon that wanted to do that and started doing it. It was basically like, let's take RPG Maker and use the Bob White plot and we're going to make an Ultima. And I think what Avitus felt at the time, this is just trying to reach into the cobwebs back, but I think he wasn't really pleased with how things were going with that, and so he just decided he was going to break off. And so he messaged me at some point and said, "Hey, do you want to do this?" And we talked about like, "Hey, let's call it something different." And we kind of got together the main thought of it. And of course, you know, Alter U9 later was known as Eriadane, but we kind of jumped ship and started this other thing. So yeah, I mean, I was there.
I don't know what Malari thing. I was there. Now let's sort of get the genesis on this, because like that whole attempt to remake Ultima 9 was characterized by fits and starts, I guess, is kind of my take. Because like Alter U9, right, began as an RPG maker project. And then at some point, Moi Dragon, I think he pronounces it Moi, because he's French himself, and then he like, you know.
But I'm sorry. No worries. I'll apologize to him now.
No worries. We're at odds, so whatever. If you see, he's also known as Taxalot. So if you see that name around, like in the comments forums, same guy. Ah. But anyways, he was starting with RPG Maker, and then at some point he re-envisioned Eriadane as a Neverwinter Nights project, and then kind of briefly tried to resurrect it more recently as Neverwinter Nights 2. But that's the path that took. And to be honest, like he was the one who actually put me onto Neverwinter Nights when I was kind of putting my toes into the fan remake scene waters. And I still actually like NWN, like for its tool set. Like it's really awesome. And I think it would have been good for Eriadane as well. But obviously never finished. Although he did share the design document with me some years ago. I wonder if I still have that. But that's immaterial and a side point. So obviously coming off of Alter U9, using RPG Maker, was your first thought to continue using RPG Maker, or were you just like, nah, just scrap the whole thing, let's do this awesome from the ground up, pick a new engine and run with it?
As I recall, the original plan that Avitus had was, let's use the Dungeon Siege engine, which at that time was not yet out. And, you know, which really, I mean, I've said this before, and some of you have probably seen me say this before. I really feel like if we had stuck with that and worked together with, for example, Lazarus and the U6 project, that it may very well have actually happened. And that's just my speculation, but I think the fits and starts, I think that's fairly accurate as to how things kind of turned out.
Well, I mean, you know, it's interesting you mentioned like the U5, U6, because I mean, those were obviously some of the most high profile remakes and some of the most technically sophisticated and notably released. It would have been interesting to see a U9 remake emerge out of that, you know, because like that was, you know, you're talking about Project Britannia, right? And sort of the technology sharing that took place behind the scenes, because each team on their own probably wouldn't have succeeded. The Dungeon Siege engine was capable, but ludicrously difficult to wrangle. And, you know, Lazarus especially was really pushing it far, far beyond, I think, what it was really meant to do. I can totally see how, on the one hand, it is tempting maybe to look back and say, yeah, if we had been on board with that, it would have succeeded. But then on the other hand, if you'd been on board with that, the technical hurdles would have been very, very high. So, you know, nothing is ever certain, I guess, is what I'm trying to say here. But right, it would have been interesting to, you know, see it as a Dungeon Siege type game. Because in a particular way, you know, the Dungeon Siege engine and idea wasn't all that far off of the original idea for Ultima 9, which was, you know, sort of that isometric-y 3D perspective.
And I should say, too, that the people that really would love to play that isometric Ultima 9, me being one of them, I really think this, you know, that probably would have scratched that itch to some degree. I will say this too. I think one of the things that really held Alter U9/Eriadane back probably was sticking to the Bob White plot, because if you look at that plot, there's some things that you have to do to make that story happen that I'm not a designer, I'm not a coder or anything like that, but it seems like the whole Civil War plot and getting that to really look interesting and actually play out in an interesting way probably would have been challenging whatever the engine that you have. I mean, it's kind of like you have a war supposedly happening in Ultima 6, but you never really see it happen. And so, I think that the original conceit with Ultima 9 Redemption was, let's do an original story. Let's take it, let's not limit ourselves to this. Let's come up with something different. And while I'm sure a lot of the things that we came up with were very like fan service and fan fiction-y kind of stuff, I do think that a lot of the things that we were talking about were a lot more compelling to me personally than even the Bob White plot to some degree.
Yeah, well, and I think one of the things that characterizes the Bob White plot is that you're really in this situation of thinking that, or like, it really, the picture it paints of Britannia is very much that, you know, there's a lot going on around you. You're not just, you are not, in some respects, you're not the focus of the story in the Bob White plot. You're a participant in this story, but a lot of the story is going on around you. And there's other stuff happening kind of simultaneous to the whatever you're doing that, which gets difficult to manage. And I think you're right, like in any engine, it gets very difficult to manage because it's a lot of different variables that you wind up having to juggle. But but at any rate, you ultimately didn't go with the Dungeon Siege engine.
Yeah. And I even remember at the time being kind of annoyed with this. Of course, I mean, just to put this in perspective, I'm a teenager around this time. And it's a weird time of life. And especially when you're a nerd. And, I was the kid that at school, I was trying so hard to get my nerdy friends to enjoy Ultima and to get into that. And, the closest I got to that, I had a good friend that that was into Wing Commander. And so he was familiar with Origin. And so we would talk about that, but he didn't really care about, RPGs in general. But, it was an awkward time for me, but at the same time, like, trying to communicate with other people and make all this happen was kind of challenging looking back on it, because there was one day where Avidus just said, okay, we're going to go with the Morrowind engine. And I was just like, what?
You're like, that, what now?
And now, I mean, again, I think we had, if I remember correctly, this was before Dungeon Siege had ever been released and before Morrowind had been released. But he just sort of decided unilaterally, we're going to go this way. And, that's fine. But I would dare to say, you mentioned difficulties with the Dungeon Siege engine. It really seems like Morrowind maybe offers more difficulty than that. I don't know.
Well, at least from what I saw from projects that used it, Redemption included, as it played out over time, was that even if it was maybe a little bit easier overall to edit with, because I do think it was a little bit easier overall to actually build a world with, and I do think its scripting interface was a little bit better, it gave you lots of rope, and it was real easy to hang yourself.
Yeah. And so, that would definitely be, to me, it was just a challenge to get all that together. And then, of course, I don't know the flow you want to get to here, but the time when Avidus left the project, that's the big thing that seems to sort of be central to the conversation, because literally he dropped off the map.
He did.
And
he
no one
up and disappeared.
Yeah. And no one knew where he was. No one knew his, no one knew his real name. If anybody, will the real Avidus please stand up? We'd love to talk to him. It's fine. I probably could have wrangled that a bit better at that point, because I was trying to sort of like pick this up and go on, but so much of it had been left behind, and you can't just kind of go back and say, oh, if I had done this or that. It was an interesting time, though, because there was a lot of possibilities. We felt like, oh, the fans can continue, push this on, and we don't need Lord British, or that was never really said per se, but it was this mindset that like we could make it happen. And generally, I don't think we could. It's that you had these successes, but I think for example, Lazarus, that was done by a guy that this is his career now, and so that wasn't really me. I wasn't, you know, I was never really in it to break into the game business. I wanted to see a good Ultima, you know, good, I say good Ultima 9. I'm talking to a fellow that likes Ultima 9, but you get what I mean. I wanted to see a more worthy end to the series in my mind. One that would be fulfilling.
Okay.
Just a question. You talked about both the projects, Lazarus and the Domestics project, and both games are the only remakes who have been finished of any of the Ultima games that were started around the start of the year 2000s. And I was thinking about mostly the story of Redemption, because to me it seems that the biggest difficulty was not rebooting the technical aspect of Redemption, but struggling with writing difficulties, maybe. So do you think that, and I look at most of the fan projects that deviate from the classic Ultima stories, they never got very far. Featherlands, Ultima Return to Serpent Isle, Redemption, all the Ultima 9 stories, the strange thing about Blackthorn Adventures. All these had very great ideas, but beyond the difficulty of deciding a game engine, it looked like the writing difficulties shaping a true story, which is different of taking an existing story and enriching it like Lazarus or Project Ultimacy's project did, is the struggle, maybe, from my point of view.
That was kind of where I was coming from too, a little bit. Was maybe going to get into that a little bit later, but it's, you know, not a bad thing to raise right now. Because that was kind of my own struggle too. Like, it's one thing to, you know, want to remake a story that's already been told, because the story's already been told. It's quite another thing to want to tell a completely new story and create it from scratch. You know, and even if you're working from, you know, well, there was an Ultima 9. It's not the Ultima 9 that we're attempting to retell, but, you know, it does exist and we can borrow from it as needed. And we do have, like, you know, Bob White's plot summary, although that was like a Usenet post plot summary. It was comprehensive, but certainly not like an actual project document, right? So yeah, we got the project document years later.
Yeah. And I would agree that writing is part of the challenge, especially if you're, I'm sorry, but Klaus was going to say something first. I didn't want to interrupt.
Yeah. No, the Bob White plot document that we have now, it's been, what, 15 years after the start of Ultima Redemption that we got it. Yeah. So back then, it was very, very, very sparse. We had some article about Ultima 9, discussion about the struggling difficulties of the start of the game, on how they changed the plot a number of times. And indication from Lord British on the stuff at Origin of what they expected to do first. But we didn't have, back then, I pored over the Ultima 9, not the guidebook, the hint book that was released, yes, and the story about Ultima 9 to get some bits and pieces about the story of the game. So it must have been very difficult to just rip up the story of the Bob White plot itself from all these sources. And one of the concepts that was very interesting about Redemption very early on was to reintroduce concepts that were dropped from the Ultima 9 storyline, which were present in Ultima Underworld 2, concept of Pagan. And that was really what was striking me with early iteration of Redemption.
Yeah, I think that before Avid has left, there was like a really good amount of people involved. I don't remember a number, but it seemed like we had some decent writers involved. It seemed like we had some, you know, some people that could do some things, but it just seemed like that sort of all crumbled. You know, I will say there were a lot of good ideas, I think. You know, one of the best ideas to me was, you know, instead of having just a civil war, why don't we actually have a Britannia that's conquered already? Why don't we have this invading force from another world? And I think it was Shadow of Light Dragon that came up with the world name of where Killorn Keep was from in Ultima Underworld 2. And I think she named it Atarka. And so the whole concept was that the Guardian was going to use this military force from Atarka to come in somehow and subjugate Britannia. And by the time you get to Britannia, they're already conquered, even to the point that there's no longer the Council of what was it called in Ultima 5? Council of Wizards? Council of something?
Grand Council, Great Council, something like that.
Great Council. Okay, so that's no more, actually. And that's replaced with a Senate. And it's gonna be this whole situation where the people are being told that, you know, that you're getting better representation this way. This is, we're gonna turn away the tyranny of the old system, and we'll still have Lord British, but you know, really what it's turned out to be is that Lord British is a figurehead. He doesn't really mean anything in the grand scheme of things. And
borrowing ideas from George Lucas well before he had
but you know, just things like that. And there was this whole subplot about Blackthorn was actually going to be a senator there in Britain, but he's undercover and he ends up wanting to help you turn things back and restore power to Lord British. So in our Ultimate Redemption, Blackthorn literally would have been a good guy. And I think that was one of the things that everybody was very annoyed with. All of a sudden, Blackthorn's a bad guy again. There were a lot of neat ideas. I put a document on the chat stream here about the Guardian's origin, and it's not very well written. Please don't judge it for that. But to me, concept-wise, story-wise, that's like one of the best, to me, one of the best accomplishments of you know, my time with the project. I'm not saying I didn't come up with that completely all by myself. I actually had a lot of help with, you know, just sort of thinking up ideas with a few different people. But, you know, it was literally, it's interesting too, because I don't want to keep going, Kenneth, if you want to chime in at this point. Okay, well, like the concept actually was not that different from the Ultima 9 that we got, in the sense that the Guardian is indeed a different, you know, similar force to the Avatar. But the concept was that, hey, you know, those bones of Zog that have turned up in the previous games, turns out that guy was actually a dude that lived like hundreds of thousands of years ago. And he was an avatar on this same world, except they called him the Guardian. And instead of humility, it was pride and so on and so forth. So he found out about the virtues. And it turns out that it was a situation. I don't remember all the story. You'd have to take a look. But generally, it was that, and also blended in with the original concept that the Guardian and the Shadow Lords were related somewhat. But I mean, that seemed like a much more interesting thing to me, because it makes sense when he says, you know, if you're going to explain it that way, it makes sense when he turns up on your monitor in Ultima 7 and says, hey, this is my world. I'm going to be their Guardian again. And I don't know. Maybe that's a little too fanficky, but I always like that thought.
Yeah, indeed. And I'm actually just looking at the image dump now in the chat channel, and I'm wondering how I'm going to incorporate this into the article. I think I may wind up having to put a lot of these into the show notes, at spamhumbug.com. And then this might also end up as like a gallery or something at gallery.ultimacodex.com. We'll see.
Well, you don't have to use every one. Some of them I'm not particularly proud of, but...
I don't know. Like, some of this concept art is pretty awesome, right? Like, we've got the... I mean, this is nice, right? Because there's, like, some classics here, right? There's the acid slug, and then you got the corpser, you got the cyclops, you got an imp, you've got... Yeah. I'm assuming that's a gargoyle. Gazer.
It's a demon.
Gremlin. And hang on, let me just tap in that. Oh, is that a demon? Yeah, you're right. That would be a demon. Sorry, I'm just looking at the thumbnails. I don't have it zoomed in so I can read all the text. There's the Guardian. He looks less Muppet-like. There's YOLO, Lord British. Another Gazer. And, an Etten. Well, that's all right.
Yeah, just to explain too, the one right above the Etten was the Ethereal Enforcer. And our idea there was that these guys would be present at each of the shrines. So the idea was that for you to meditate at the shrines, you'd have to beat these guys. And I don't remember all the reason for that, but.
Well, I mean, like they're, you know, you're, in a way you could argue you're borrowing from like U6 there, right? Because that's what the gargoyles did. They captured each of the shrines. In a way you could argue that, you know, the Guardian probably figures that if the Avatar is going to oppose him, the virtues and therefore the shrines, which represent them, are going to factor into that opposition in some way. And so it's best to, you know, if not destroy the shrines, then at least make them difficult to access.
And I'm just remembering, too, that they're sort of in the way that we were thinking how the Guardian would be fighting this battle and how the conquest happened. There's a timeline somewhere, I don't remember where it is, but I'm sure it's pretty easy to find, that tells you kind of how everything happened. But he was going that, you know, the upfront, the public view of it is here's this force coming in. Oh, Lord British is a tyrant. It's almost as if they frame it like, you know, like the people at Serpent Isle might frame it. But Lord British is a tyrant. You need to be freed. Serpent's Hold is completely destroyed. You know, they destroy the major, principal hold fasts or, you know, Cathedral of Love, so on and so forth. And so there would be this public face of it that we're going to liberate these people and help them embrace freedom. But at the same time, the Guardian's going to be fighting from this other angle too. And that's going to be the more quiet, secretive angle. So you do have these mystical shadow lord type figures that will go through the land and basically try to discourage people from trying to really do anything with the virtues at this point.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, like, on paper, it's not a bad idea at all. Right. Because, like, sure, you're right. You know, you mentioned earlier, I'm a big fan of Ultima 9. I continue to be a big fan of Ultima 9, but I'll readily admit that, you know, there are some shortcomings to the game, some issues with the game. And having spoken with the people that I've spoken with, having gained access to the documents I've gained access to, having accrued the knowledge that I have over time of just what went on behind the scenes to actually get this darn game out the door, like even just recently, we were having a great discussion on the UDIC channel, actually, vis-a-vis the Underworld 3 design document that Pix posted. There was a discussion about, like, you know, some of the planned features for Ultima 9 that are mentioned in the Underworld 3 design document. And one of those was, you know, multiplayer. Ultima 9 was supposed to have some kind of multiplayer component. Because, of course, Origin at the time had just launched Ultima Online, and EA was keen to see Origin include online features in all subsequent games. If that sounds kind of familiar to fans of BioWare, well, it should. But so, like, the discussion that emerged from there surrounded Ed Del Castillo, who was briefly a producer on the Ultima 9 project, kind of in the interim between, well, anyways, you know, like, he came in at a particular point. And he's reviled by fans for a lot of reasons. And I think a lot of that actually has to do with Bob White. Bob White really did not like Ed Del Castillo. And I think Bob ginned up a lot of hatred for Ed, which I think most of is undeserved. But one thing that Ed did, which probably is one of many, many ways in which he saved Ultima 9, was he completely batted away EA marketing and EA directives stipulating the inclusion of an online component. With an assist to Bill Randolph, you know, and if you go back and read the Codex's interview with Bill Randolph, he talks about this too, about, you know, being approached about adding online features to the game. And he would know what he's talking about. Bill would, because previous to his time at Origin, he had worked at Westwood Studios and he had built a lot of the networking components for Command & Conquer. So he kind of knew where he was coming from, and people came in. And, you know, EA marketing, EA exec came in and they're just like, so, hey, can we add online features to the game? And he was brutally frank with them. He's just like, sure, it'll take this much extra time. And they're just like, we can't give you extra time. And he's just like, well, then we can't give you online. So, but, you know, ultimately Ed as producer, for the brief time that he was producer, was the one who batted away that suggestion and actually said, no, we are not including online in the game. And that probably saved the project. But... it just, you know, it's one of those snapshots of just how troubled the development of Ultima 9 was. And, like, you know, now it's easy almost 20 years later to look back and see with fairly clear eyes exactly what happened in the project. At the time that it came out, we didn't know any of this had gone on behind the scenes. We had heard that it was in development, and we got a particular product at the end of that development cycle. And some people were disappointed and some people were ecstatic. The game reviewed fairly well. It didn't sell as well as some of the other Ultimas did. But, you know, now, nearly 20 years later, we can look back and we can see there was a huge amount of internal tumult at Origin Systems. We can see that the game had engine iterations. Actually, not even that. It used the same... It was released using the same engine that it started with. It's just that a whole bunch of extra bits, the 3D, the over-the-shoulder perspective, all of this stuff had been tacked on. Again, the Bill Randolph interview is, because he was the lead programmer, is remarkably informative. And this is, you know, they had a whole rendering engine running inside their rendering engine. the technical chaos, and then, of course, the chaos of reiterating the plot, but never polishing. The game had its struggles. It had a ton of struggles. And, you know, kind of being able to look back and know this, I don't know. I liked the game anyways. I think that knowing what it took to actually get it produced and released certainly redeems that in my eyes, or redeems it more in my eyes. I would hope that it would for other people too. But, you know, like, I can totally see the desire to... I do get the desire to, you know, push that aside and say, well, you know what? Okay, like, that was what it was, but maybe we can do better. There's a lot of us who think that we can do better. This is a very common mentality in fandom. See Star Wars.
Yes.
And you know what? It might actually even be true sometimes. It might actually be true that a bunch of fans could put their heads together and come up with an objectively better story that is objectively more faithful to what has come before than what the official developers release.
Well, that's another aspect of it, isn't it? Yeah. Because, I mean, and I understand this too, like, as much as I would love to, you know, if someone turned up tomorrow with, hey, if someone were to message me and say, hey, I've got the alpha for the original proto isometric Ultima 9.
I'd be all over that.
Let's check it out. But I'm sure if that's the way that it had gone, there still would have been things that we would have been unhappy about or, you know, displeased with. You know, because there's an aspect where, I mean, it's kind of like, again, back to Star Wars. Is there a way that George Lucas could have done the prequels that would have actually pleased everyone's expectations about all of it?
No.
Probably not. No. And so, you know, you give that guy a break. And it's funny that now I'm giving that guy more of a break than I probably ever have in my adult life, because it's like, well, you know, at least he was trying to do something,
yeah.
You know, something different. Nobody liked that new different thing, but at least he was trying. I'm sorry, that was that's a generalization, but I think that's ultimately what probably happened to Ultima and Redemption, though, is that we've got to have this be everything, and that's kind of impossible. And I think one of the reasons why Ultima Lazarus exists and was released is because you had someone who was leading it who said, yes, this is the way we need to go, and you know, put his foot down sometimes and expected certain things to be done, et cetera, et cetera. And I think Avitus was that kind of person, but you know, unfortunately he left. And yeah. I'm not even today, socially, I'm not a very take charge kind of guy, much, much less so when I was however old, 14, 15, 16.
Right.
So that's it. I mean, as far as that part of the story goes.
Yeah.
Also,
and, sorry. Go ahead, Klaus.
No. Two things. Ultima 9, the original concepts, we can see from the design documents, was always going to be an ending of sorts. And in the early documents, including Bob Boyd plot, it was pretty apocalyptic. And I'm not sure, even with the original engine, if we are able to pass through it or play it, it wouldn't have pleased a lot of the fans back then. It was Lord British way of capping the story by ending it in a definitive way. So I'm not sure that even if the game had run its course without all the hurdles that we learned about later on, we would have a product that would have satisfied the fandom. I mean, what people expected from the end of Ultima 8 and from all the hints that were released in Ultima 7, Ultima 7 Part 2, and Underworld Part 2 was something more of a grand heroic ending, and not the bleak view that we had in the original take of the game. But that's the problem with fan expectation. Ultima Redemption and leading project is something that happens to a lot of fan projects. It's not your fault or anything. It's you have to have a strong lead to just achieve something, and it's not just fan projects. It happens in real life. In my current career, I see it every day. People don't like to make decisions because they have the fear of hurting people or being pointed at for bad decisions. And projects who finally happen, maybe they are not what everybody expected, but they are ended, finished, because somebody at one moment decided strongly to get this decision done. And it's even more complicated with a project that starts from the ground up, like Redemption, because you had to check for the engine, for the character characterization. You couldn't reuse all the NPCs from the previous games. It was a mammoth of a project. So kudos for what was achieved in the end. And I still think that, yes, could you have kept the idea of going on with the Project Britannia 1 engine? Maybe could have redirected energy in the writing, but even that, when you see all the difficulties that professional people like the team of Lord British right now with Shroud of the Avatar has on creating a compelling story and translating into a game, it's quite an endeavor. And I respect all that you have done for all of these years. Even if in the end we didn't get a game, it's all the effort and the time that was done in it, which is remarkable. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting you mention that because, like, I remember, oh my gosh, there's so many different ways I could go with that one, right? You know what, let's stick to, there's something that kind of percolated underneath a lot of what you were saying, Klaus, which I do want to bring out a little bit. And, you know, Clothos, this may have been, I guess, too, the question we should ask is, like, when did you depart the project?
Okay, so Avitus left. There was a span of time where I was just trying to keep it going in some form. And I really don't remember all the details of when and how exactly, but I think it was somewhere around, it must have been somewhere around 2004, 2005. I was messaged by Corv, who at the time they were working on an Ultima 10 of some kind. I don't know. I don't remember all the details of that. And Corv, I'm sorry, I don't remember all that. If you're listening,
the new King thing.
Yes, the new King, and they're okay. And he basically approached me and said, "Hey, let's combine our teams. There doesn't seem to be much happening with y'all, and you know, let's combine. We'll do Ultima 9, and then we'll do Ultima 10." And, you know, looking back on it, it's like, wow, you know, I'm thinking that's impossible, but okay. Yeah. I didn't think that then though. At the time I was like, oh, okay, cool. You know, you guys can help us and we'll help each other. Cool. So, we went along with that and I was kind of happy to let Corv kind of take the lead there. And, so it seemed like this was reinvigorated. It seemed like things were going well for a while. And, really, I wouldn't say I left the team so much as faded out of the team. I thought that, well, you know, we'll keep things going. Well, graduated out of high school, went into college. I will say a very tumultuous time in my life really began, mainly because of some, regardless, youth and stupidity. That's what I'll say. Yeah. You know, regardless, I fell out of that essentially and really got to the point where I kind of became sick of it. I didn't really want to deal with it anymore. I didn't really want to work on it anymore because it got to the point where it seemed like all the work that had been done beforehand was constantly being thrown out and we were needing new things to replace that. And for a little while, I think I was the one that was saying, well, wait a minute, we already had a plot summary. We already had this. We already had that. Oh, well, but we need to do this. We need to scrap that and do this. And I'm just, you know, I think this is maybe like 4 or 5 years into the time the project has happened. So, I kind of faded away from it. And again, it wasn't necessarily this principal decision. Hey, I'm going to leave this. It was that reasoning that, you know, everything that had come before that I thought was the first itineration was pretty good concept wise, but it seemed like a lot of that was being thrown out. And, I mean, you know, again, I'm not blaming anybody here and I'm not blaming Corv, but, I just got to the point where my life didn't really gel with actively working on it, if that makes sense. And, so that would have been around 2004, 2005.
All right, cool. Because like one thing, and Sir Klaus kind of teased this point without ever explicitly stating it, was, and I mean, we're seeing this now, you know, he mentioned Shroud of the Avatar, you mentioned Wing Commander, we could mention Star Citizen, scope creep.
Yes.
And like, this is one thing I remember thinking about, Ultima 9 Redemption, just kind of in the last couple of 3 years of its development. And this is something that I know Sorgon Dragon and I talked about a great deal, was they had this vision for just massive cities. You know, take the largest city in Skyrim and then like double the number of NPCs. Which, like, on the one hand is cool, because it's cool to think that you might one day get to play a game or a, fan mod, but still, in which you could walk through, you know, a proper city and then feel like you're actually in a proper densely populated city. There's the slight hurdle of making all of those NPCs interesting or characters in their own right, right? You know, like you're not, because that was the thing in Ultima, is that apart from maybe like the guards, every NPC was a very distinct personality, was a very distinct character.
Everybody had a story.
Exactly. Everybody had a role to play. And they all had lives. And that was the other part too, right? Is they all had lives. And Redemption really wanted to recapture a lot of that, right? There weren't NPC schedules in Ultima 9, but I believe Redemption wanted to include those as well. So now you need to create all of these NPCs, make them interesting, unique individuals, and then give them lives. Give them a daily routine to follow that they follow. Even implementing one town, like implementing Britain and however many dozens of NPCs they wanted to have in Britain, and I can't even remember the number off the top of my head, but it was huge for a game. It just seemed like there was no way that it could be done. It would have been cool, but I just, there didn't seem to be any way that it could be done. Not with a small fan volunteer team, not with a big fully paid development studio team for that matter. Because it's just not something one can do. You know, it's not to say that you can't have like an Assassin's Creed type game or Hitman type game where, yeah, you're in a busy city and there's lots of people all around you, but you don't talk to most of them. They don't have dialogue or character or lives or anything like that. They're just scenery. We're talking about an Ultima fan project. We're talking about an people trying to make an Ultima game. We're talking about people who are trying to create that level of NPC population, but all of them have a story to tell. All of them have a character. All of them you can interact with and learn something from and learn about. And they're not just filler. And that's, well, I mean, like the Radiant quests in Skyrim and Fallout are lampooned for obvious reasons, but there's a reason that Radiant was developed, right? The reason that Radiant was developed was because it was sort of, you know, using this pseudo AI technology to create these NPCs, which, yeah, are basically just quest givers and reward distributors, but at least there's, you know, sort of, you know, the idea of Radiant was that there's some stuff going on behind the scenes that at least kind of makes them a little bit different, a little bit unique from each other, even if practically speaking it's mostly just, well, here's a quest, go do it and then come back to me. But you know, like, there was a reason that Bethesda went with an AI driven solution, a generated solution, versus trying to write each character individually.
Yeah, and maybe that could have been possible with like a Daggerfall style, you know, we're just going to populate all these characters through an algorithm or something like that. But I mean, who among the Ultima fan community would have been, I mean, at least among the project, would have been talented enough to put something like that together?
I remember we had this discussion before, but I think that one of the main roadblocks for any of fan projects is the scope. I mean, most fans are very enthusiastic and want to have a game that will be remembered for all the time, which will fix all the misses of the original game. Just make a small game.
Yeah.
Just make a small chapter. I said it before, there's a lot of modding engine, and even with not modding the mod engine, I mean, just try to use the modding engine to create a single chapter of your story, and make it simple. But it's something that most of the team never do. I mean, Lazarus is an exception in community of Ultima, because it has someone who ended up being a developer and a team leader professionally. But beyond that, just look at all the fan pages and all the games that were the vision of one person and didn't gel. I mean, In the current situation of the fandom, you have to choose either you want to get a great engine or you want to tell a story. And if you look at the current situation, things that happen like Dark Unknown, they use 8-bit era engine. And it's all, and even with an old engine, it's complicated to do simple things. So I can't even imagine having the Morrowind engine or any other later engine that Bethesda gets out, and having on top of that a scores of dozens of NPCs, and on top of that modding it to do some Ultima-like mechanisms happen. I'm not sure we need that. It would be fine, sure, but as a team of non-professional, non-paid, because you can't, it's a fun thing, it's going to be very, very complicated and very difficult to happen. I mean, just let's take RPG Maker again and make some of chapters of a story, not connected between them, just telling a story in a place. And you can see it's already going to be complicated because you have to get artwork and things like portraits and things like that. And all the other mechanisms are already happening in the RPG Maker thing or in the community of RPG Maker that you can download and reuse for yourself. But, well, anything will be more complicated than just throwing ideas on paper, which is what we like to do as fans.
I think there was an Ultima fanfic that was done years ago. I can't remember the name of it, but it was essentially making fun of the whole Ultima remake scene. And I don't even remember the name of it, but...
Ultimar X10, the something, something Warriors Lost Gate Isle.
I just remember there was one character that had been defeated in the remake wars, and he stumbled into a tavern and yelled "Clorthos." But anyway, yeah. So, but one of the things that I remember that was made fun of in that story was that, oh, you can just say that you're making a remake and just, you know, slap some desktop backgrounds together and just drop them on a website and say you're going to use this engine that's going to be released, you know, 10 years from now. And so I think, you know, kind of on that same level, I think if you know that you can't do something that big, drop down your scope, do a smaller game, or pull back on what you're doing mechanically. Like, I think you could do what Ultima 9 Redemption wants to do plot-wise, etc., if you went with like an old style Ultima 4, Ultima 5 game. You would really have to simplify it. But I've thought about, you know, what, you know, if you could do a demake of some of these ideas, maybe that would be easier to put together.
Well, you know, I think Klaus really hit it on the head too. It's like, you know, at the end of the day, you're a small team of people doing this in your spare time. The odds that you're producing a AAA blockbuster right out of the gate, having never released anything previously, are low.
Right.
Generously, they are low. So yeah, it is very much, you know, understanding that. And, you know, either committing yourself to the long haul. You've mentioned the Dark Unknown, and that's been in development for a long, long time now.
Or Unknown Realm too.
Say what?
Unknown, yes, Realm
as well. Yeah.
And both of them, if you look at, are mostly done by a single person. So there's no lead team difficulty. Yes, use things from outside is creation, like picture for the manual, things like that. But he has the idea, he has a single drive, and he can do it because he's alone in the seat, maybe.
Well, yes. But then again, at the same time, too, you know, you're committing yourself to a pretty long-haul development at that point. Or, you know, you're committing yourself to a more simplified end result, right? Maybe you could tell Ultima 9 Redemption's story using an 8-bit engine But you'd probably have to accept certain limitations even then. It would probably wind up being a fairly linear retelling of the Ultima 9 plot, you know. And that's, I think, you know, like, that's actually one area I think that Ultima 9... People like to lambast Ultima 9 for the fact that, you know, at least initially, it bottlenecks you and is kind of linear. It doesn't let you explore Britannia fully. And if you... You don't actually have to cheat. There are a couple of ways, if you're good with jumping and you know your way around the continent well enough, to escape the initial area, like, you know, Britain Paws, that area, and get to some of the other parts of the continent. Of course, if you do that wrong and you're not careful, you trip the wrong plot flags at the wrong time, and you risk rendering the game impassable. Because, you know, it comes back to juggling variables. And that is always, always problematic. But Ultima 9 gets lambasted for being kind of linear at the start and sort of railroading you into proceeding along the plot in a particular way until a certain point. And then the continent kind of opens up and you're able to also sail to some of the islands and it gets better. But, oh dear, I hear my son waking up. Ultima 9 is... overall, surprisingly open world for a 3D RPG released in 1999. It's worth considering that pretty much everything that came after it for nigh on a decade in the 3D RPG space was really, really linear. Oh, and also had absolutely no interactivity whatsoever in the world, whereas in Ultima 9, you could move everything around. Anyways, I apologize. My son has just woken up. I'm going to keep the headphones on so I'll be able to listen in the conversation. But if you guys have anything else to discuss.
Feedback, by the way.
Pardon?
Are you guys getting some feedback? I'm getting like really loud feedback for some reason. I'm not quite sure why.
But it's going to be the end of the recording for me because it's 6:30 in the morning. I have to prepare all my household for the next hour. So, thank you for the discussion.
Thanks.
It was really interesting. And, well, I hope that someday we'll get a proper Ultima fan game out there. Maybe someone will try to, with a lesser scope, rework Ultima 1 as a modern game. Who knows?
Yeah, the possibilities out there.
Yeah, there's a lot of things... that you can expect. But the difficulty, and as we always say, it's been, more than almost 20 years now since the last game. And we're still discussing. So maybe there's still hope.
Hmm. So I guess it's getting on towards, midnight where you are, 11 where I am. So should probably think about wrapping this up. But, on the one hand, it's tempting to say, was there a point where you thought for sure, oh yeah, the writing's on the wall for this project? But then realistically, if you departed it in the 2004-2005 window and it limped along until 2016 roughly, that's still a fair chunk of time. It's a long chunk of time.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing.
Yeah, to say the least. And not just
necessarily in a good way either.
Well, I mean, limped along is probably probably an unfair way to put it, because there were developments, you know, like they did build a lot of content for that game or for that mod.
I do remember, one moment that, it seemed like maybe that things were going to come together was when they released those screenshots and, the one, I can't find it, but the one that is... really zoomed up from Britain,
yep,
and sort of at an angle, and it almost looks sort of photorealistic. That was a moment where I was just like, that looks really cool. I actually downloaded, I think there was a time where I still had access to the FTP. And so there were a couple of times where I downloaded the master and, ran it in Morrowind and, actually went to Destard and fought a dragon at one time. There wasn't a whole lot in there, but you could just literally, go through the whole of the land. But I don't know. I think the scale they had, even if they had completed it, it might have felt like a slog just to kind of walk through, because you've got a lot of, I don't know if you ever fired up the, you know, whatever they released, like the final stuff that they had, but
no, I haven't had time.
You just have a whole lot of space to it. And, you know, again, it goes back to, would they have been able to fill up all that space? Probably not. And, so that's just something to keep in mind there. But I do remember that kind of being a moment where I was like, well, maybe it will work out. I would love to play it. That's kind of what I got to after all that time. So.
Gotcha. Well, you know, I can't help but thinking that we've only just scratched the surface. We may have to do like a part 2 on this. I'm not sure. But I can't help but thinking that we've only scratched the surface. So we will see. At any rate, like, it's interesting, right, to hear some of the genesis of the project and some of the pitfalls that it went through. I think this is just a thing with Ultima 9. I think that, you know, anything that's just attempting to be Ultima 9 has to go through this multiple existential crises.
It's a rule of the universe.
Exactly. Exactly. But at any rate, thanks for taking the time. This was awesome. And thank you for all of the images and content there. I'm going to have to work those into the show notes somehow, because there's a lot there to chew on. And again, like, it really goes to illustrate sort of some of the new things that the team was trying to do, that the Redemption team were trying to do. But then also some of the callbacks to classic Ultima that they were trying to include, which, like, that's a nice balance.
Yeah. And, you know, it is kind of neat to look back on it and think about the time that I put into it. At the same time, you know, I don't feel like any of that was wasted. But there is one of these images is like a pencil drawn map that I literally did by hand. And really, it's just a copy of the Ultima 7 map.
Yeah, I can see that.
Grid by grid. But I added some things, you know, tried to make it look a little bit more like it did. Or at least what I thought it would look like. You know, one of the big iconic things was Trinzik being laid waste and sieged, which, you know, now that I'm thinking of it, you know, it's kind of interesting too, because the concept of a foreign army coming from another dimension or another world to conquer this place, it's very similar to what Shroud seems to be doing with the Obsidians. You know, the Obsidian Empire supposedly, you know, restoring order or whatever. You know, because I was just looking over this timeline that Klaus put down, and I'm thinking, you know, why would anybody want to serve these guys? They come in and they kill hundreds of people, assumingly, take over, you know, try to totally change the culture. You know, it's one thing when Blackthorn kind of says, hey, the king's away for a little while, you know, I'm the ruler now, we're going to make sure we follow the virtues. You know, I think you could swallow that, but this is something else entirely. So I don't know how much sense it would have made in the grand scheme of things, but
I don't know. But you know, you could look over the history of, you know, the many, many different conquests that have been perpetrated throughout history and probably find a fair number of examples of exactly that.
Maybe so. Maybe so.
You know, I mean, was Vichy France all that different?
I do like a lot of those story concepts, though, that instead of focusing on this civil war between the Britannians, you bring in this outside force that is spinning things and kind of telling people, hey, you know, what you have really isn't that great. And, you know, I think that would be that seems to make a lot more sense than what was the Guardian really doing in Ultima 9, except just trying to destroy the whole land. I don't know.
And that is one thing that I think, you know, it's a real shame that we did lose, is sort of those behind the scenes machinations that were part of the Bob White plot, that were part of Ed Del Castillo's plot treatment for the game. But, you know, that's what multiple restarts and, you know, eventually imposed timeline constraints, saying, you know, like, just ship the game already or kill it. That's what those do, right? Is you lose a lot of that nuance, especially when, you know, it's down to the wire and you are in sort of that late development crunch and you don't even have time to iterate your dialogue. You know, you're literally designing a scene, designing a plot sequence writing out the initial draft and sending that to the voice artists.
Yeah, everybody, that's the thing too. Everybody, I think, has their own imagined conclusion to the series. You know, except, yeah, I mean, even someone who likes Ultima 9, Kenneth, I'm sure there were some things that if you could go back and change about Ultima 9, you would.
There's lots of areas where I'd like to see richness and depth added, sure, yeah. Right?
But, you know, there was something, I think, in one of the interviews you had where they were one of the guys you talked to, it may have been Bill Randolph or whoever, but he was saying, you know, we were trying to do kind of what Skyrim did. And
yeah, just 15 years earlier.
Yeah. And that's, you know, once I learned that, I was like, okay, I kind of get that. I kind of understand that. At the same time, it's really interesting when you see, and again, this is not a dig at Lord British per se, but when you see a lot of things he says about Shroud of the Avatar, I can remember reading in the gaming magazines about Ultima 9. And it really seemed at that time that Richard Garriott was saying, this is going to be all the best parts of the series in one game.
Yep. And he had lots of ambitions around that too.
And it was just, this is going to be everything you like, and it's going to be even better.
And then we're going to remake the earlier 8 games with the same engine.
Oh, do you even say that? Do you really say that?
Oh, yeah. So,
wow.
There was, okay. Like I say, tons of ambition. Anyways, this has been a great chat, but I think I'm going to have to bring it to a close because my son is waking up again, and this might be a longer wake up. So,
everybody, I'm out. Thank you, and have a nice day.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
I really appreciate you inviting me to be a part of it.
No, this was great. Thank you so much. If you want to participate more directly in the podcast, you can send us an email at ultimacodex@gmail.com, or if you're feeling a bit braver, you can leave us a voice message in one of 3 places: the podcast website, our Facebook page, or on anchor.fm. You're also welcome to join us on Discord to chat with us and to lurk or contribute to podcast recordings when they happen. If you want to join the Ultima Dragons, you can do so at udic.org, whereat you can choose your very own dragon name. You can also find the Ultima Dragons on Facebook and on Google+. You can follow at Ultima Dragons on Twitter, or join them on Slack or Discord. And if you're feeling really old school, you can even fire up a Telnet client and check out the Wearmount. If you'd like to support Spam 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 Humbug, you can do so at Patreon, where for as little as $1 a month, you can get access to episodes the day before they go live for everyone else. You'll also get access to behind-the-scenes audio on occasion, and possibly other interesting content. But if a monthly subscription isn't your thing, you can always buy your video games at GOG. We are a partner of that fine site, and every time you buy one or more games at GOG via the links on our websites or in the show notes, that helps us out. But we also welcome your moral support. You can like the Ultima series on Facebook, follow at Ultima Codex on Twitter, or leave the podcast a review on iTunes. And you're welcome to share our episodes with your friends and social media circles. Spam 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 Humbug is a production of the Ultima Codex. You can find show notes online at spamspamspamhumbug.com. Thank you for listening, and until next time, be virtuous.